Afternoon. I'll just start by thanking Ed and John for facilitating my participation here today. Basically, what I'm going to talk to you about, I'll give you a bit of background information and contextual information in relation to the European Union and the European Commission in particular, just for those of you who aren't experts in European integration since 1955. I'll just follow that up with a bit. It's quite fortuitous that I'm here at the moment because we've had a couple of events in the last 7 days which have really become a turning point in terms of our policy and activities in the area of justice and home affairs. One of those being we are in the process of adopting our next five-year plan. That's how we do it in Europe. We have five-year plans called the Stockholm Programme. And the other one was a quote from our president of the European Commission, Barroso, just in terms of improving cooperation and reciprocal activities between the US and the EU in the area of security and security research. So anyway, a bit of background. Also, I was just interested, on a personal note, I was just interested in terms of your reference to Northern Ireland. Obviously, that's quite close to my heart. Especially, say, on an ethnographic level, I would have relied on my father telling me stories of the Dublin and Monaghan bombings and his experience of a couple of buses being blown up on the quays in Dublin and how that affected a couple of the drivers that he knew. And also in terms of the process towards reconciliation, which was facilitated in no small part by Senator Mitchell. It's interesting how those aspects of research are very important. Anyway, the detail. Right, anyway, I'm just going to talk about the institutional framework. This is all about context, so when I go on to the research priorities, I'll try and intersperse it with just a couple of notes on the quantitative and qualitative research that has been discussed heretofore. Basically, three parts to our institutional framework. European Council, which is all of the heads of state of government get together and make all of the big legislative decisions. Below them, we have a Council of the European Union, which is all the ministers from the 27 member states. These are the 27 nations which comprise the European Union. For example, the ministers of justice would get together. Associated with that, just to let you know, it's 50 years old. 27 member states. We've got about approaching 500 million European citizens. And just this framework, just to let you know that this basically European legislation accounts for almost 75% of all the legislation which is crossing domestic legislation tables in the member states, 40% of which of European legislation is JHA, Justice and Home Affairs legislation. Anyway, we also have the European Parliament, which is approaching 740 directly elected representatives. This is an interesting area in terms of we have a Lisbon Treaty coming up, which is the next stage of development of our European Union. We're waiting on the Irish electorate to say yes or no to this treaty before it goes ahead. If it does go ahead, basically the European Parliament will have more powers and more say in the area of justice and home affairs, and to an extent it's seen as a counterbalance in the area of data privacy and protection and fundamental rights. Anyway, that's the European Parliament. The European Commission, that's where I'm from. Basically, this is the policy centre. This is we spew out all of the legislation that has to be digested by the other two institutions and then has to be transposed by the various member states. So anyway, within the European Commission, there's Directorate Generals, that's the DG there, and we're called DGJLS. The L is the French for freedom, liberté, so that's justice, liberté, security. So anyway, where we're moving, this is just an overview of our work. We cover these various areas. So what you could say for comparison with your administration, we're an amalgam of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice, because we cover right across the board. We have the following agencies which are under my DG's kind of responsibility: Frontex, which is border management; Fundamental Rights Agency, which is based in Vienna. Obviously, the name, it does what it says on the tin. Eurojust is not an agency, it's an office which looks at cross-border judicial cooperation; Europol for police, and CEPOL for police training. Just in relation to what Laura was saying about that MAROB, Fundamental Rights Agency just released the MIDAS survey, which again is a survey which looks at ethnic minorities' experience of justice and home affairs within the European Union. So again, it would be an interesting complement to that kind of quantitative research that's going on in that MAROB database. Anyway, so the approach that we're taking, and I'm talking about approach because how we approach also will dictate what kind of research we want as we go forward. As I say, just a caveat before I dive into the Stockholm programme, we've made our submission to the Council and the European Parliament. There will be another 6 months of negotiations and discussions around this draft document before it's ratified and accepted. But anyway, the draft is a public document, so therefore I can discuss it in a public forum. Just to let you know, it's the main focus. If any of you go into that, policymakers over here would be obviously interested in that document. The first thing you'll know when you have a look at that document, it is very value-driven and citizen-centered. This is our Commissioner Barrow, who's a Frenchman, has taken it as a priority for himself to kind of reorientate and bring the values of the European Union in terms of integration back to the centre of the debate, and also to bring the citizen in terms of accountability right to the centre of the debate as well. So anyway, just I will give you a couple of fact and figures. Just to give you a bit more context about the environment we're working in as policymakers. Basically, what we've got, we have 8 million people who are nationals of one member state living in another member state. We have 3.8% of our population, which is 18.5 million people, who are legally resident from third countries outside of the European Union. We have an estimated 8 million illegally resident within EU borders, and obviously estimates always err on the conservative side, so it's a real black box of a figure, that one, an interesting area for research. In terms of designated points of entry, this is an interesting figure. I'd love to shake the hand of the man or woman who counted them all. We have 1,636, which are legally designated entry points. Now, you're talking about the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa, all the way up to the northwest coast of Ireland, in terms of all points of entry. So we have a huge geographical spread in that respect. So I think in terms of those statistics, what they contribute would be to the overwhelming characteristics of the European Union would be seen as mobility and permeability. Permeability, of course, in terms of borders. So when you cross-reference those figures with the fact that in 2007 we have records in relation to 600 failed, filed, or successful terrorist attacks in 11 of our 27 member states, and then you add to that the structural demographic pressures concerning aging populations and labour market needs, that will give you an insight into why we need research, why we need research really quickly, how it's such a complex area to work in, and why people who work there get grey hair really quickly, essentially. So that really kind of looks at the context. The Stockholm, I've kind of talked about what that's about. In terms of the raison d'etre of the EU and the need to develop an EU internal security, which is the next stage, we had a Tampere five-year programme that was followed in 2004 by the Hague programme. What they were essentially to-do lists. What we're doing now is we're moving into the next phase, and we want to produce a consolidated and coherent way forward. And that's why we're looking at developing an EU internal security strategy. So again, that's on the table as a proposal, but we're putting down a marker in terms of how we want to contribute and add value to citizen mobility and et cetera, and security, of course. So again, with this coherence and with this promotion of an internal security strategy, we'll need more and better research. Okay, so essentially what these next two bullets, I'll just glide over them. Enhancing operational cooperation, that's how we don't have direct influence in terms of how member states carry out policing operations and investigations. In relation to, so what we want to do there is we want to just enhance and facilitate in terms of technology and quality of research that we can provide them. In that respect, Michael's reference to the counterterrorism coordinator in Madrid is very relevant in terms of he would be one of our key clients in terms of how we need to furnish him with the best and most credible and objective type of research into counterterrorism. Again, given that in relation to the last bullet in external policy, again, we're looking at the area of, say, human security, where crisis prevention in a far-flung place does have a knock-on and ripple effect in terms of waves of immigration coming into the European Union and the destabilizing effects that can potentially have. So again, given that we're globally we're the greatest donor of official external aid, we need to hook into the work that's being done there and make sure that we can optimize the investment that we have in the EU as a whole. So again, this is where kind of research of a qualitative nature into, say, operations that we're conducting in, say, Central Africa or the Far East, in terms of how successful our programs are at managing the internal dynamics of the of affected communities in these places, is very essential in terms of how we can, one, target those successful programs in other areas. I mean, basically, we have 13,000 people deployed across the globe in terms of working in various operations. So that's a lot of work that's ongoing. That's a lot of research that needs to be looked at. Okay, so anyway, the activities, I'm not going to focus too much on this because I think essentially the areas that I'm covering here are state of the art. All that I would say in relation to this is that you've basically got two categories here. The first three bullets would be I would say that they're basically known unknowns in terms of we know there's a lot of research being done in this. This is in relation to research. We know there's a lot of research been done out there. Say, for example, the work that Michael's just been doing, which is looking at militancy, which is essentially radicalization and recruitment. We need to hook into that. We need to channel that into the practitioners in the field. The second, and also terrorist financing and extremist use of the internet would fall under that rubric. The second one is more of a known known in terms of what we're looking at here is that we just need to kind of map these areas and apply risk methodologies and threat assessment methodologies to these areas. So again, that's another area. Again, okay, the more meaty stuff. These are our research priorities. This is kind of, you can apply these and say, well, integration and identity politics obviously applies to radicalization and recruitment. We need to really kind of tap into a lot of the qualitative work that's been done in the area. Also, in terms of financial flows and transactions, information hubs and flows, again, the work that Laura referred to, just that particular glaring slide on the social networks, that's very relevant here. What we're looking at is an interest in terms of interdisciplinary work. Previously, interdisciplinary work would be considered as mixing law with international relations, but based on the work of a couple of chaps in Cornell University on the small world problem, you're looking at an interdisciplinary area which would be looking to map criminology, criminal behavior, with physics. And also that applies to the area of financial flows and transactions and how that links into terrorist financing. Also, what we want to do is build on work that's been carried out in the area of money laundering. Again, information hubs and flows, this links into extremist use of the internet. An area of concern for us within the European Union is the rise of extremist, right-wing extremism. And how they're using the internet, how we can look at the hubs and flows in terms of the technological development on the internet and how that can help us. In this respect, I think there's a nice segue in terms of exactly what Laura said, that the quantitative research provides, orientates the compass points and kind of will lead us to where we need to invest in terms of our many financial instruments and funding opportunities in terms of the more qualitative dimensions and how we need to kind of, once we know where it is, we need to explode. We need to explode myths, yeah, in terms of what you were saying about the sensationalism of the media report. For example, some of the policy briefs that would pass our tables, they would be highly influenced by the press. We need to go deeper down, deeper down. I think that's a song by somebody. But that's where we need to go. We need to provide more in-depth research to our decision makers. So in that respect, there's a nice compliment there. Another thing I would say in relation to that GTD, I was very impressed with Laura's presentation and also Gary's yesterday. In terms of particularly, I think Gary covered a number of questions that you didn't, which were the more basic questions. And in that respect, that quantitative research that's been done is a useful corrective. In terms of giving a maturity to our security policies as we go forward. So I think that's a good way. Anyway, traceability and vulnerability. I'm going to wrap up now in a minute. Traceability and vulnerability. I mean, this we need to cooperate with the private sector in terms of securing chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and materials which can be used for explosive devices. The last one is the really hard nut to crack, which is foresight. And in terms of how we want to approach this and the kind of research that we'd like to assist us with foresight, I would say functional and instrumental would be the two words there. Unfortunately, in the past, foresight exercises have been tainted with, as was referred to a previous speaker yesterday, with ideological outlooks and stuff. So we need to kind of bring that foresight activities down to the basic level. What we need to do is we need to look at demographics, population movements, developments in technology. These are the things we need to bring together. We need to apply them to an appropriate context. And that's what research needs to provide us with. This is the work that I'm involved with at the moment in terms of developing appropriate fora and appropriate ways forward in terms of foresight. So, that's it. I'm really going to conclude. I just think I have another couple of points. Now, just a couple of general points from notes I've taken. I know I'm probably at the pink marker here now. But I think really what we need as well as policymakers in terms of, fair play to you with the research that you've carried out. But if that's to land on my table, I would say I haven't got time to look at process. Give me the facts and figures. Give me the executive summary that I can hand up to our political decision makers. Give me the more basic stuff which I can give over to the practitioners in the field. Give me, I'm not going to, give me information that I can easily transfer and easily demonstrate in a conference environment or a seminar environment such as like that. But it's a fine balance because, I mean, research, I'll give you an example and I'll conclude on this. We have two types of instrument. We have a call for proposals, whereby we have a very general heading, we invite calls in. So researchers have a lot of scope in that respect. Then on the other one, we have call for tenders, where I prepare a terms of reference, which is very detailed. And it will say, I want A, B, C, D, and E, and F, and I want 12,000 words, 1,000 word executive summary, etc., etc., annexes on A, B, C, D, and E. And that's grand. And that's that kind of encapsulates the kind of the balancing that we have, because we can't be too directive, but yet we need the research to support our policy initiatives. So I think one of the general themes I'm getting from this conference as a whole is the need for cross-pollination between researchers providing good research to policymakers and policymakers feeding that back in terms of how they feel it is, how it is supporting their policy work, and how it's providing them with one, either the right questions, or two, the answers in the right format. I'll conclude on that. Thank you.